January 2nd, 2021. It's Watt Pedro Show.
You crazy fool, go back to bed.
For Pedro Show, happy Saturday, first Saturday of 2021, which is a trippy thing to say. Started off John Tim. Coltrane doing Fifth House, and then you probably heard that I'm not all alone, people. Yes, Brother Matt, he's in the Love Grotto at Pleasure Point a couple miles south because we're still in quarantino mode, but I'm not totally man alone because those engineers in Estonia with their incredible Skype invention. I got Skype Brian invention. Coleman talking to me from London, England. What's your earliest musical recollection, Brian?
My earliest musical recollection is probably the Beatles. And we used to live around the corner from this shoe repair place, Jimmy's Shoe Repair. And Ed Sullivan lived across the street from there at Delmonico's. And I would go in with my dad and get our shoes shined like every Saturday. And about one in every three or four times, Ed Sullivan would be there. And my dad knew him from vaudeville days and would always tell him, you know, like, oh, my kid loves the Beatles. And Ed Sullivan would always lean over and tell me that the Beatles were finished. He took great pleasure in, like, basically sitting there and seeing this little kid going, you know, these guys that are your heroes, they're over. They're done. You're never going to hear about them again. They're done. I'm never going to have them on the show again. And the first time he told me that, it broke my heart. And the second time he told me that, I looked at him and I realized he was wrong. And that was the first time I realized that the people who were the guardians, the people who were in charge, who were telling us what the world was, didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. And that was big.
They thought they did.
That was huge.
Yeah, yeah. So you grew up in Manhattan then?
I grew up in Manhattan. I grew up Midtown. And, you know, my dad had all these different jobs, but he was the sort of person who knew how to read figures. And during the Depression, when the Roxy Music Hall was about to go out of business, he didn't know anything about entertainment, but he knew about numbers. And whoever was in charge said, if you take over the Roxy Music Hall and try to keep it going, it might have a chance. And so that's what he did for a few years. And I mean, that was way before I was around, but He grew up and came up in a world with, you know, the Marx Brothers and Ed Sullivan and Walter Winchell and Greta Garbo. And those were sort of like household figures. Not that they were in our household, but their names were.
Well, in your house, was there musical instruments?
There was a piano, and it was always being polished. We had this Steinway Baby Grand, and later on, like after I'd started to play a little guitar, I'd start to fumble around and make my way around the notes. But as a kid, it felt like if I even touched the piano, my mother would come in and start dusting it or polishing it because I had somehow soiled it. So that wasn't part of the equation.
But part of the equation was also not less. You're going to take lessons.
Well, I think they figured out pretty fast that wasn't going to work for me. I didn't know anything about music coming up until I discovered the radio when I was about 10 or 11 years old. And
what about school?
Then,
what about school?
Sorry.
You know, grade school, like the choir or the marching band, junior high, high
school? Yeah, there was, we didn't have a choir. We didn't have a marching band. We had like a sort of scary guy. Not scary because he'd hit you, but scary because, you know, he might come over and hug you, and you didn't want that. And he would basically, I remember some of the songs, you know, horrible. There were campfire songs, but they were songs, you know, that you'd sing around campfires where the fire had already died out.
And what instrument did you play?
Songs to keep the animals away.
What instrument did you play, Brian?
You know, I was sent to a tennis camp when I was about 13 years old, and I hated tennis, and I also hated wearing white. I mean, at 13, I was already like in my Johnny Cash thing of like all black. And I don't know why I was sent to this tennis camp in Essex, Connecticut. But everybody there knew something on guitar. And I basically figured out what each person knew. And by the end of tennis camp, I knew all their tricks. And those tricks were not substantial.
So I knew
how to get from one chord to another.
Yeah, let me understand this. You learned guitar from a tennis camp, but that scary music teacher, you didn't play anything for him?
No, he didn't have you play. He played piano, and they kept coming back to the same song. You know, and as I remember, it was something like, "Let's go hunting," said Ricky to Rob. "Let's go hunting," said Robin to Bob. "Let's go hunting," said Daniel to Joe. "Let's go hunting," said Billy Barlow.
So he had you guys sing. He would accompany you on piano, and you guys would sing.
Exactly.
Okay. I ask people about school because, you know, some schools completely got rid of their music programs.
Yeah.
So I'm always curious about that. What was Brian, what was the first record you bought for yourself? Was it a Beatles record?
No, it wasn't a Beatles record. It was... and I don't think I actually paid money for it. I think I convinced a babysitter to buy it for me. But it was North to Alaska by Johnny Horton.
Yeah, I remember some of those songs. Well, I remember the guy. He had a bunch of...
John left Seattle in the year of 92 with someone rather his partner and brother Billy, too.
Yeah, but he had the one about the Battle of New Orleans, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I ask you about buying it with your own money because, you know, when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so I'm curious. But you tricked the babysitter again. What ended up being the first gig you saw?
You know, the first gig I saw was probably not a gig. Just from the time I was about 12 or 13, I'd wander down to the village, and there were these different clubs. There was this club there, it's still there, but in a different configuration. It was a club called a Café Wa, and it had a big picture window, and they had the doors open in the spring, and you could hear what people were playing. And I remember, like, just wandering around and hearing this group called Lothar and the Hand People, and... Lothar was actually I think a synthesizer, and the Hand People were the band, but they had it set up so that it's like Lothar was the evil genius that controlled them. And so they were subservient to this synthesizer, but they were a pretty good band. And I remember I would go back, they were the house band for a while. And one of the days that I was walking past, Gene Clark from the Byrds sat in with them. and did Mr. Tambourine Man standing in the window with Lothar and the Hand People backing him, and he did all the words to Mr. Tambourine Man, not just the ones the birds did.
Well, Bob Dylan and wrote it right.
I didn't know the song went on for, like, you know, 37 verses. It was like, damn.
Yeah. Well, Bob Dylan, I think that's the methamphetamine or some kind of stimulant version of Bob Dylan. So there was a lot of words. I want to play As a Man Gets Older.
You find as a man gets older, he stops using words like forever. As the bills start coming due, you might change your point of view, etc. Time cannot hold. Time cannot bind us. Take us away. I'm
Thank you. Merci, bonsoir. On se promène à l'artistique. Sterling, Lars, Emily, and Sarah. Thanks, Jenny.
Liar.
down at all. I'm filled with big ideas and just a couple drops of alcohol.
I'm one of those who will, and I'm definitely going to.
Okay, people, that was Brian Coleman with As a Man Gets Older, and he wants to enlighten you with some information.
Yeah, that, I don't always write with other people, but in this case, I have a really dear friend named Barry Reynolds. And Barry wrote Broken English for Marianne Faithfull. He wrote a lot of stuff for Grace Jones. He wrote beautiful songs. And we always talked about writing together, but we sort of like we'd get together and we'd drink coffee and we'd talk about movies. And we never got around to writing very much. But we were over and he started playing me these chords. And I just thought, I can do something with this. And I took the chords away from him. And I added a couple of little touches of my own. This one chord there that goes downward starts to go into Nick Drake territory. But what I wanted to do, and I sort of feel like I almost got there, was write as if I was using English as a second language. You know, I sort of figured, like, what would it be like if I was trying to, like, channel some sort of a Garcia Lorca poem or something by Pablo Neruda. And so I'm not going to write in my own voice. I'm going to write and have it be a little bit stilted. But if I have it stilted, I'm not going to be embarrassed to say things that I might not say, like, out loud.
Yeah. We were talking about this kind of yesterday, that guest was on, and talking about being on tour, and you don't know the neighborhood, so you have all this fake courage. You could be walking into these hell zones. Maybe it's the same thing. I got to tell the people, we heard Chatbot from Pat Kane's new solo record, really good. Devil Hoof from Devin Hoff. He's did this to start the year off. Ursula, Lala Odo. Weird Feelings after that. I think they're from Poland. Shadow. Earthquake. No, no, they're from Dublin. God damn. Good thing about Alzheimer's, you're always hearing new bands.
Exactly. They're all new.
Meet new people. Earthquake, Life in Paris about 8 months ago. Kim Gordon, War of the Devil's Guide by Void. Bob Pollard with the new fucking album. Go, Bob. Bombas Prendon, Postcards from B. Prendon from 40 years ago. And finally, New Year's Eve. Ah, we're a couple nights late, but that's from you, Brian Cullen. And Brian, now you went to this tennis camp and you come back to Manhattan knowing how to do guitar. So what how does music go for you from there?
You know, the thing about being like 14, 15 years old and playing guitar is you have no idea how much you don't know. So you're just fearless. And by the time I knew three chords, I figured the fourth can wait. You know, it's like I'm going to back up eventually. And I immediately started going down to these basket houses. Now, for those of you who are, you know, perhaps under 50, there used to be these places in cities like San Francisco and New York called basket houses where essentially people who were either totally insane, totally incompetent, or both could get up on stage and just harangue an audience for 10 or 15 minutes, at the end of which you pass a basket around, and either out of guilt or fear or just pity, people would throw a buck in. And there was a place called the Four Winds, and this was on 3rd Street, I think, West 3rd Street, and they had a weird cabaret law, which was basically that you were allowed to play music or sing, but not both at the same time. So they had a guy standing at the door, and if somebody that they thought was, a song inspector, a cabaret inspector, they would suddenly give you a sign, and no matter what you were doing, you had to go into an instrumental. And, you know, I knew maybe five songs, and I only knew one instrumental, which was Angie, which, you know, Simon and Garfunkel did. It's a Davy Graham song, and it's in A minor. And all of us who play acoustic guitar at some point or other learned Angie. And no matter what I was doing, no matter what key I was in, I would have to stop the song and go into Angie. And so for the audience, it was pretty schizophrenic, but that didn't matter because one of the things the club was really famous for was they served Coca-Cola for 75 cents, but you could get a rum and coke for a dollar, which was a really good deal unless you looked under the hood, because what a rum and coke was coke with a squirt of Windex in it. And that's how they could get away with doing it for just a dollar. I guess if you could have a double shot that you could pay $1.50 and you could get two shots of Windex, but no one I knew ever did that.
So, but this is like Man Alone, solo busk. What about the band thing? Did you get into that shit? Manhattan, you don't really have garage bands, but you might have a bedroom band.
Yeah, I had a couple of those. You know, always with people who were a whole lot better than I am. I had a group called the Lead Balloon, and this was before Led Zeppelin, but and it wasn't my idea, so I can't take any credit, but there was a kid who played amazing guitar, just sounded just like Mike Bloomfield. And his younger brother played bass. And I don't think we had a drummer, except sometimes, like, one of them knew a girl who had, like, some bongos, and she'd come over. But I would strum along, and we'd play songs that either we'd make up. We had one really, really good song. It was a good title, which was, they call it Earth, but it's mostly water. I still think that's like a genius title. I'm going to do something with that. If you do something with it, God bless. It's been sitting there for, you know, 40 years or more.
What was the first Lead Balloon gig like?
There weren't any.
Oh, it was just a practice band. Okay, that's all right.
So the first time I actually had a little band, I put a group together And they're almost all still really good friends. We got a gig playing, you remember a guy named Felix Pappalardi?
Yeah, bass man.
Yeah, bass man, but he also was a producer. He was in Mountain, of course. Produced Cream.
Of course, and he was shot to death by his wife.
He was shot by his wife. He did some dodgy stuff. So he had a club in Denver. And I mean, on the strength of a demo, which was pretty terrible, he invited us out to Denver to play for like 10 days at his club out there. And we were so excited. And I had a friend who was a drummer who had a car. You know, drummers all have cars. And I got... a good friend of mine, Robin Bateau, who was a violin player and mandolin player, a beautiful singer. He had a group years and years ago called Appaloosa. And so he was going to come along and play violin. And my friend Patty was going to come and play drums or play percussion. And literally 2 days before we were going to take off, Robin Bateau got a call to do a session, and it was a big session. Someone wanted to record a song of his, and he had to bail on us. And I was devastated because, you know, we had a gig, we had a drummer, we had a percussionist, we had me, we had a place to stay in Denver. And, a friend of mine told me that, a good buddy of his, who had been playing with Steely Dan but wasn't playing anymore, was available, and that he could come out and he'd play with us, but he couldn't drive out with us. We had to fly him out there. And, you know, that pretty much took all of our lunch money, but we flew him out there, and I've become friendly with him since, so I'm not going to mention his name, but he messed us around pretty good. We met him at the airport, and... you know, I'd heard the stuff that he had done with Andy Pratt and with Steely Dan. And he was a hot shit guitarist, and he sang beautiful harmony. And he got up to the airport, and I started talking about rehearsing. And he went, yeah, yo, we can rehearse, but I need my own room because I got to pray. And that spooked me a little bit. I have nothing against prayer, but... I do have something against people having their own room when we don't have any cash. And then I started asking about guitar, and he said Jesus had told him not to play electric guitar anymore. And Jesus had also told him he shouldn't sing harmony. And at this point, Jesus was starting to get on my nerves. And he basically did this rehearsal with us where he kept walking around and looking at us, and really looking at us like we were evil. And my friend Patty, who this great girl from somewhere in Illinois, Meridosia, that's where she's from, Meridosia, had this necklace that I'd given her. I bought it on the street, an African necklace. And, you know, it was pretty funky. It was made from monkey teeth. But this guitarist kept looking at the necklace, and the necklace spooked him so much that he basically stole the car and ran away and disappeared on us, and we tracked him down. We did this great detective work. We found out that in Denver there was a very hip Mexican restaurant, and I knew that this guy was really into waitresses from Mexican restaurants, so I went out there, and she basically said, yes, he had been in there and that he had been psychotic. And he kept walking around the restaurant going, I've seen teeth like that. Those are human. Those are human teeth. They did something bad. Uh-oh. Anyway.
Brian, I got to stop you because we're at the end of the first hour. January 2nd, 2021. Dish of Watt Pedro Show special guest, Brian Coleman. Hold tight for hour two. January 2nd, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
I used to think that there was something, something we could do to retrieve, darling, what we had. But now the ways seem few. Matter of fact, they're long gone. Every path we might have explored. No way to buy back the time we lost. No way that we could afford. Nothing left to try. Nothing left to say but goodbye. Oh, darling, weren't we full of hope? The future looked real good. We were gonna beat the odds. Oh, we were sure we could. But it seems the cards were marked. The dice were loaded too. Anyway, we were lousy gamblers. Baby, you know it's true. Nothing left to try. Nothing left to say but goodbye. So here we are together now, sitting here at this table, this shabby little diner. Well, ain't it a hell of a place to end our little fable? The waitress pouring our coffee, she's as bored as bored can be. There's a distant sadness in her eyes that envelops you and me. You and me. Starting to rain outside. Umbrellas are coming up. The waitress is giving me dirty looks as she refills my coffee cup. Guess it's time to get out of here. Out into the nasty weather. Go ahead and leave, I'm gonna stay here a while. Ain't no point in leaving together. Nothing left to try. Nothing left to say but goodbye.
Well, my home has got two windows. The turn never comes true. I'm so sad and lonely since I broke of baby with you. I live on Lonely Avenue. Since you said we are through, now I feel so sad and blue. It's all because of you. I could die, could die, could die, could die, could cry, could cry, could cry. I live on Lonely Avenue.
My room has got two windows. The sunshine never comes through. I'm so sad and lonely since I broke up, baby, with you. I live on a lonely avenue. Since you said we are true, I feel so sad and blue, all because of you. I could die, I could die, I could die, I could die, I could cry, I could cry, I could cry, live on a lonely avenue. My pillow is made of lead, and my cover made of stone. I toss and turn every night. I'm not used to living alone. I live on a lonely avenue. Since you said we are through, I feel so sad and blue, all because of you. I could die, I could die, I could die, I could die, I could cry, I could cry, I could cry.
Could cry, could cry, could cry.
Live on a lonely avenue.
Well, my room has got two windows.
The sunshine never comes through.
I'm
so sad and lonely.
Since I broke
a baby with you. I live on a lonely avenue. Since you said we are through, I feel so sad
and blue. It's all because of you.
I could die, I could die, I could die, I could die, I could cry, I could cry, I could cry. Live on a lonely avenue.
Swimming in your tears, the pouring rain. the desert door has closed again, my friend. I'm wandering through your trail of warm ruins until I feel good, until I feel good, until I feel good, knowing that I knew. Sugar in my veins. Ah, watch me burn, I am a leaf. I am red and gold. There is sugar in my veins, and it's the sweetness that makes the flame. I sing all quiet to the spirit kids in my giffy drone. Their roots are deep and their branches touch me until I feel good, until I feel good, until I feel good, knowing that I knew you. I am a leaf, I am red and gold, there is sugar in my veins. Ah. Watch me burn, I am a leaf. I am red and gold. There is sugar in my veins, and it's the sweetness that makes the flame. Sweetness that makes me burn. Sweetness in the flame. Sweetness that makes me burn. Your ashes on my face today. I feel the power in your pain. But sometimes silence is the strongest thing until I feel. Shh, until I feel. Shh, until I feel.
more.
Station. There's no diamonds in the mine, and I need something to hold on to. Just give me time if there is time. All the angels of our nature are stranded on the Harlem Hudson line. They left me nothing I can wager, only time if there is time. All the birds have left the garden, and the moon has quit the sky, and here without a star to guide me, just give me time if there is time. Thank you. little affection. Just give me time if there is time. Just give me time if there is time.
Yeah, you know, an interesting thing about Denver, home of Dean Moriarty, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Neil
Cassidy
that,
and his father and all that, and he drove cars and stuff. But anyway, we start off the second hour. Well, if you read On the Road, it tells you a little bit. It's probably embellished a little bit. But Wrong Birthday from Brian Coleman. Then Sam Bennett, Nothing Left to Say But Goodbye, The New Lessers. These guys are from Poland. Yeah. Lonely Avenue, Mary St. Mary with Ashes, To the Full Extent of the Law from Jerome Parker Wells in St. Louis, and Spelo Apatado para Oso Aboro de Uma Canoa. You know, my Portuguese terrible. So sorry. From Aruba Avua. And finally, Brian Coleman with Time If There Is Time. And we got time for you. So this guy was a nightmare. But what did you learn about the music racket from this lesson?
You know, we actually played a gig. We got to Felix Papalardi's club, and it wasn't there. I had a couple of those. You probably have a couple of those. But he had burned down the club. He'd set fire to the club for the insurance money. So we got a gig at Colorado College in Colorado Springs.
Sure.
And they paid us enough money that we could actually get there. And they put it, they were so sweet to us. But at that point, it was just the drummer and me.
Patty's gone. Patty's gone. I think Colorado Springs has got the Air Force Academy.
It has the Air Force Academy. It's got some great people. It's got, I think it's got skiing, if you like to ski. I don't do that sort of stuff.
No. Well, but it's kind of on the border there. It's on I-25. It's weird about Colorado. They got all their big towns on I-25, right? Pueblo, Fort Collins, Denver, Colorado Springs. And then there's going across I-70 east-west. You know, I've done a little bit of touring, so. You come back to New York City after this Denver thing. What happens to the lead balloon?
Lead balloon, you know, I think we still exist in some format, and I still know Mark and Andre, and they're great guys. Mark's, they're both artists. They both turned into visual artists, and I think all that energy went into color and design and fabric. But back in New York, I basically was just ready for anything. I answered ads. I basically had all of these wild meetings. And, you know, I had a meeting with Lieber and Stoller. And, I mean, these guys are heroes.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, they wrote everything.
Yeah,
incredible. They basically just designed the fabric of our country. If you walk around in shoes, you know, they put the soles on our feet. And it was the meeting with Lieber and Stoller, and I got to say, they were in the room, but they were at the far side of the room, and it was a big room. And there was a woman there who had – I had answered an ad in the Village Voice, and they had – I don't know whether they had liked me or if I was the only person who had answered the ad, but you know, basically, I went up to this beautiful, beautiful apartment, 57th Street between Park and Lexington. And obviously, somebody lived there, but, you know, it was about 3,000 or 4,000 square feet. You know, you could put like 7 or 8 of my apartment into there. And I got to the door, I knocked on the door, and this woman opens the door and sort of like looks at me and goes, "Ah, I love the hair. And the pin, I was wearing like a little pin of a camel on my lapel." And then she went, "Oh, I love the look. Come in." And basically, sits me down and tells me their idea. And if you basically got like a bunch of people in a room and thought about the worst idea you could possibly come up with, the most vulgar, the most degrading, the most criminal way of using what talent, you wouldn't come close to this. Basically.
Okay. So, I want to play home. We're going to reveal this. Let me play this bunch of music here. I want to play Home Before Dark.
All the trains have left the station. There's no diamonds in the mine. I need something to hold on to, just give me time if there is time. Now all the angels of our nature are stranded on the Harlem-Hudson line. They left me nothing I can wager, only time if there is time. All the birds have left the garden, and the moon has quit the sky. Here without a star to guide me, just give me time if there is time. to bend. Time passes slowly, that's what she said when she was out killing the dead. Next time, maybe they'll let our spirits go.
That was Brian Coleman at the head of that chunk of music there. Home Before Dark, then The Hysterical Injury. God, I love that band name. Skyline Interface, The Snowball's Chance in Hell with the Unless, The New Harnessians. I guess they're new to wearing harnesses. A Piece, Please. I Burned Myself, I Think of You by Plus Dog Plus. And finally, Killing the Dead from Brian Coleman. Now, you got to tell us how this meeting worked out, Brian.
So you want to hear about the Lieber and Stoller situation.
Well, right. You preface it with, like, the most degrading thing you could ever think of, wasting some talent, right?
Absolutely. So these are the guys that... they did everything. You know, they basically created the firmament. And so I go in and I don't know her name. Maybe let's call her Shirley. You know, basically sits me down and goes, now, Jerry and Mike. And Jerry and Mike are at the far side of the room. And the far side of the room is about 3 zip codes away. And she goes, Jerry and Mike, we're going to do this animated cartoon show. It's going to be every Saturday morning. It's called Heavenly Hound Dog. And... the moment she says that, you know, my soul just slips further and further down into my feet. She goes, so Elvis is there in heaven, and he's a little boy in heaven, and his hound dog is with him, and they get into these amazing adventures, like dancing around in the countryside, and Elvis has this little straw hat on, and he's like got a corn cob, and he's just dancing down, and they sing, and they play, and wouldn't that be a great place for like a Saturday morning cartoon show? And we can use all of Lieber and Stoller's great songs, because every time they go somewhere, every time they meet somebody, and it can be somebody living or dead, anytime they meet somebody, they've got a song. And so I ran.
You might go and visit Big Mama Thornton. You ran out of the room, right? You ran right out of the room. Okay.
We'd just come over and eat them, you know. It's like, that would be it.
Oh, man. Well, you know, you must have got into some interesting bands or some music situations besides that bullshit.
Yeah, I was in great situations. Now,
for one thing, you gave me something live that you did with Vernon Reid.
Well, I had this little band. It was a really great little band, and I'm allowed to say that because the reason it was great was not necessarily me. I had these wonderful players, and they had put up with me. You know, because in every band, there's got to be some guy who, or girl, who basically makes the phone calls and books the gigs and sends out, like, the mailings and just is driving the vehicle. Now, they don't have to actually know what they're doing, but a lot of the really great musicians don't want to do that. So I was the guy who just went, I'm going to get us a gig at the Cat Club. I'm going to get us into Hurrah's. I'm going to get us to play Peppermint Lounge. I'm going to make a demo. And Sarah Lee from the old Gang of Four was
great
playing bass.
Yeah, great bass lady.
And she's not just great. She's just the genius of bass. And I say this with love and deference and respect. One of the things that makes her so good is she only knows how to play a couple of different ways. And they're all perfect. They're all perfect, but she just sticks to these notes that just ring out and hold the song together. What a wonderful person to play with. Loved her. Loved her to pieces. Still
she
did.
Played with Chic. She played with B-52s.
Yeah, she played with Robert Fripp in the League of Gentlemen.
And then with Vernon was on the other guitar, right?
Well, Vernon wasn't a full member of the band. Vernon had his own gig with Living Color, but Vernon was a really dear friend and still is. And whenever we had a problem or whenever we had a solution, he was there. You know, if we had a big gig and we needed someone to just add that little extra spark, he would turn up. And the thing about Vernon is he would never rehearse, which is usually, you know, for the type of music I play, that's usually really good because it means, you know, you're going to go somewhere and you're going to surprise me or yourself or somebody.
Yeah, the people playing with you. No, that's a good point. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, January 2nd, 2021. Edition of Peter Show, special guest Brian Coleman. Hold tight, 5-3. January 2nd, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
I know someday I'm gonna miss you. I'm gonna cry just like a baby. I know someday I'm gonna miss you, but right now, oh, right now, I'm so glad you're gone. I know someday I'm gonna miss you. It's not my pride, that's not the issue. Know someday I'm gonna miss you. But right now, oh, right now, I'm so glad you're gone. I hear the thunder out in the forest. I guess the sky is crying for us. I hear the thunder out in the forest. Says to me, it says to me, you're really gone. The devil knows that I'm a weak man. I've been around, but I'm no antique man. Devil knows I'm a weak man. Just one drink, just one drink, and I'll be gone. Take my hand like I'm a stranger. For if I fall one more time, I'm not
like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon. Like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes on its face. And the world is like an walk along the shore.
The house will be empty. Your loyal retainers having crept away, the people will gather by the gates to witness your slow receding from the world. Your retreat behind the facade. Guards will be there, as they always are. There to keep you safe. Now to watch you end your stay. You will dine in the chill of a gray morning, not having rested. You shall have bones for breakfast. Your stomach will shrink in age. And your power and rage? Cold ashes in the fireplace, as indifferent eyes turn away from you.
Thank you. hear the damned cannot say now. The past is all that we're left. The moon just went behind a cloud to chase the night. So close your eyes and make a fist. Travel it all. Land is that we'll end where we began, and if we don't quite understand, well, that's all right. Cannot see now. The past is all that we're allowed. The moon just went behind a cloud, but that's alright. So close your eyes and make a fist. Try it all tenderness. Eternity must be like. Promise of the promised land is that we'll end where we began. And if we don't quite understand, that's all right.
For Pedro Show, we start off the third hour with Brian Coleman doing Someday Miss You. And then Crane with Within the Forest, Paul Motion, Windmills of Your Mind. A great tune. You know, you were talking about three chords, right? Harry Nilsson did a version of that. And he had a hit with a song called The Lime and the Coconut. You remember that, Brian?
Of course.
That's one chord. That's C7. Yeah.
But it's the right chord.
Yeah, that's right. So, and also, Creedence has got a song, Keep on Chuglin'. It's an E7. It's almost like their monolith that they're dancing around. And then Phil Venable with the poem, Bones for Breakfast. Joy Cut with Wireless. And finally, Brian Coleman with The Promise. So, yeah, so Vernon's the man, right? So you can just bring him on there. Nels Klein is that kind of guy with me where you can just bring him in. And they react in the moment. They don't need the practice. In fact, you know, the people say, oh, I want that first take feel. These guys can give you that because it's actually the first take.
Yeah, if you want the first take feel, get the first take.
Right. Now, you got a new record, right?
I do.
And things, of course, because of the situation are kind of out of skew and stuff. And how do you compare that with these earlier days?
You know, it sounds weird, but the new record and the feeling around people playing together and getting together is, really similar to the feeling that I had with people back when I was first doing this. Because, you know, money has disappeared. No one is doing this for cash anymore. And people are coming out for different reasons than I think they were like 10 or 15 years ago. There's a better energy. And I think things tend to be a little more spontaneous. And, you know, I'm finding people, especially musicians that I'm working with, being really, really generous, really gracious, and really open about their gifts, and really ready to put themselves into a situation of exploring something that's outside their comfort zone. And I'm really lucky with the people that I've been able to play with, and with them indulging me and essentially bringing, you know, their energy and their spark to me. Because it's all about energy and spark. You know, if you hit the wrong note in the right way, it's beautiful.
It's a victory. What about the material, Brian? When was it written? More recent, you know, or does some of this stuff go way back?
A couple of the songs go way back, yeah. The only one that's really old, I mean, there are two that are a little older. Wrong Girl goes back to my band OK Savant, and you know, we used to play that back around 1991, 1992, and we never really nailed it. We never recorded it, and even when we were playing,
oops, go ahead.
Yeah, so we had this song that we did in the band, and it was like a good pop song, but it sort of just lay there. And when we were making this new record, I did most of that new record live in the studio with my buddy Jimmy Zhivago. And I just remembered that song and thought, what if we could do it sort of like Maggie May? And that's where the idea for the mandolin came in.
Faces. Ron Wood.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, it's sort of a cheesy version of Maggie May, but it has a life to it, and it has sort of a nice energy. Most of the songs on the new record really are new. They were written in the last year or so. One of them, the last song, which I quite like, is called Building. I Will Build Where I Stand. You know, I don't know if I could say friendly, or I was friendly with Leonard Cohen. And I used to send ideas to him of songs I was working on, and he would he'd give me these little crits once in a while. And we would talk a lot about prayer, because I'm one of those people that never bought into Hallelujah. I thought Hallelujah was, you know, I was happy that he made some money, but I thought that was such an overrated song, whereas he has this beautiful song called If It Be Your Will.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if it be your will, I will speak no more.
Yeah.
And my voice still as it was before.
But Brian, I think that's why people have to sometimes write more than one song, because they know that might not be the right song for you.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean? Music is such an individualistic thing sometimes. And yeah, the Merch song that everybody likes is the one you don't like. That happens to me all the time. I know exactly what you're saying. I want to play this song with Vernon that you did, Book of Sleep. I guess it was live at CB's?
It was live at CB's.
Thank you. Unwilling to protect life and property, especially in a country where the federal government itself has proven that it is either unable or unwilling to protect life and property.
Before Pierre thinks that you've got a pretty good fire in
X, I guess I call you that. Is that the proper emulation, yes. Mr. X? I'm wondering if you still believe, as I think you certainly did in the time your allies were segregated black nation,
no,
North America.
I don't believe in any form of segregation or any form of racism.
I'm against any form of segregation
and against racism.
Am I right to say that the black Muslim movement, which you have left, did believe in that?
Well, Elijah Muhammad told his followers that the only solution was a separate state for black people. And as long as I thought he genuinely believed in himself,
I believed in him and believed in his solution.
But when I began to doubt that he himself believed that that was feasible,
and I saw no kind of action designed to bring it into existence or bring it about, I turned in a different direction. Are you still a Muslim?
Oh, yes.
I'm a Muslim. I believe in the religion of Islam, which believes in brotherhood, complete brotherhood of all people.
But at the same time,
I believe in this brotherhood. I don't believe in forcing my desire for brotherhood.
I'm willing to accept it.
Because I think the Christians would say that they also believe in brotherhood.
What do you say that? I say they believe in it, but don't practice it.
Well, that'd be a pretty good answer. Sir, when the
Ruizen puts up in a minaret,
twice a day he cries to the world, there is but one God,
and he is alone.
Do you deny that there is a Christian God?
The Muezzin does that 5 times a day, 5 times,
and I only heard him twice.
Well, you were fortunate to hear him twice. But he does that 5 times a day, and the same
God that he says, that he expresses the existence of,
is the God that the Christians profess to believe in themselves,
and the God that the Jews believe in, one God, the creator of the universe.
God that created the universe,
and I think the Christians do, and the Jews do.
Now, as long as we're talking about the Creator,
the Jews may call him Jehovah, and Christians may have another name for it.
Those who are
Arabic speaking refer to him as Allah. Well, we believe in the same God.
Now, the Muslim religion
advances in the United States. Are you modernizing
or am I saying what the old things, for example,
the segregation of the sexes?
I think that everything today,
now, when you went to Mecca, this is a very sacred and forbidden city. I tried to get to Mecca myself.
I'm
not being a Muslim, but how would they accept you?
You're an American. There are
no American Muslims. This is true. And by being an American and not having not being able to speak the Arabic language, I did strike a snag, a very serious snag, but I was fortunate. Have been pretty well known by the officials in Arabia. I accepted Orthodox Islam. It had been highly publicized in the paper.
And I became a guest of the state.
I was a guest of Prince Faisal, the present King Faisal.
And they made it possible for me to go
before the committee, Hajj committee or Hajj court, to examine you
and ask you questions about your belief.
If you pass it, then you are okay to go to Mecca.
But you would have to have a translator there.
Realizing that our problem in America, that we are black Americans, and we have a problem
that goes beyond religion, we form the
problem as the organization of Afro-American unity. And the objective of this
organization is not religious, number one.
Any Negro can belong to it. And the objective of that organization is
to bring about a
condition that will guarantee respect and recognition of the 24
million black Americans as human beings.
We feel that the problem, number one, of the black man in America
is beyond
America's ability to solve. It's a human problem, not an American problem.
Or a Negro problem.
And as a human problem, or a world problem, we feel that it should be taken out of the
jurisdiction of the United States government
and the United States courts and taken into the United Nations in the same manner that the problems
of the black man in
South Africa, Angola, and other parts of the world, and even the way they're trying to bring the problems
of the Jews in Russia into the
United Nations because of violation of human rights. We believe that our problem is one not
a violation of civil rights,
but a violation of human rights. Not only are we denied the right to be a citizen
in the United States, we're denied the right to be
a human.
People, last music for this edition, and we this book is Sleep from Brian Coleman with the OK Savant, and Vernon's on, and Sarah Lee's on the bass, and Vernon, and you're hearing him, he's cueing the band because they have not practiced this song. And Hal Blaine, I was reading this thing where he was talking about being with Herb Albert. They didn't know how to get in that part, that big hit that the Tijuana Brass had. So the kick drum thing, right? Boom, boom, boom. That was just a device to bring everybody in, but it ended up being really key to the song. So I think what you were doing there is just the reality on the dealio. Okay, people,
it's the
heard,
reality.
Yeah. So you know what I mean about the wrong, we were talking about the wrong way, the right way. It's the wrong way, but it just feels bad, like at that meeting with the fucking cartoon trip. Parallel Pyres after that with Sack Yant. Shibboleth from University Challenge, my buddy AJ in Netherlands. And finally, Breaking and Entering from Brian Coleman. Where can people find you on the internet, Brian?
www.briancoleman.com.
Yeah, let's spell it for people.
Oh, spell it? Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Coleman, C-U-L-L-M-A-N.
Yeah. Because
C-O-M.
Yeah. That last one, okay. Yeah. But there's some Brians with a Y, Brian.
No, those are the guys from Wales. That's like Brian Sherry. They don't count. Nah. Come on.
Okay.
Me, you spell me just like you spell Brian Hyland.
Okay. Or it could get all Gaelic and you just don't pronounce it anyway the way it's spelled.
Yeah.
So man, you have had quite a journey. And what about meeting somebody young? Do you have any young people on this recording?
Yeah.
So what advice would you give them about this music racket shit?
Oh man, I would basically tell them not to listen to anything that I advise them to do. You know, best advice you can give someone is just do it and then do it again. You know, if you're lucky, you'll get it wrong, and it'll be wrong in a way that'll just amuse you and delight you and maybe excite somebody.
It's probably the best way to learn skateboarding. Right? You just don't do it much. Unless you're incredibly lucky. Yeah, okay. I think that's great, great advice. And you know what else? It sounds like it hasn't made you bitter. It sounds like it's made you, because some people, they've been around the track, man, they get kind of bummed out, but you sound happy, man.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah,
you know,
great. That's really great.
You do
great.
Too.
Okay, we're two happy guys. No, but really, music is a fucking bitching thing, and I think some people can get enough defeats and you take blows and you give up hope, right?
You know, the giving up hope are usually the ones who were really successful. And I've been lucky enough to be just that I haven't gotten hurt.
Okay. That's a really good perspective, man. That's better than good. That's healthy, I think. I want to thank you so much, Brian, for being on the show. Big honor. And I know you're going to do another record. And when you get that done, will you come up back on and we'll talk about it?
Hey, when I do the next record, will you play bass on a track?
Shit, yeah.
Damn, okay. It's a deal.
Okay, it's a deal.
Just don't practice, okay?
I won't practice, I promise.
Okay.
I'll be just ready to go. Just hand me those chords, a giant step, and I'll do a top flat. Tommy Flanagan.
Got it.
Yeah. People, it's been January 2nd, 2021. This is what Pedro shall keep you powder dry.